Welcome to another edition of The Tech Teachers. We're teachers who talk tech and a little bit of education. I'm Ray, and I'm a physics teacher.
And I'm Holly, and I teach Spanish. And we wanted to make sure that we give our website and email address. Our website is thetechteachers.blogspot.com, and our email address is rayandholly@gmail.com. Holly is spelled with H-O-L-L-Y-E, and we've been very much appreciating the feedback that we've been receiving. Thank you.
And it's been almost all positive feedback. We would encourage you to not only tell us what you like, but tell us what you don't like. We're trying to make the show better, but so far, I'd say 99% of the comments we get are all positive.
Which I've liked.
I've enjoyed that. It's really built up our confidence, but I think we got our confidence built up now enough that you can cut us down a little bit and give us some stuff to work on. So we want to try to make the show better. So if there's something you're hearing that you don't like, let us know.
We also put up our show notes on thetechteachers.blogspot.com.
And for those of you that don't know what show notes are or are not familiar with that, what it is everything we talk about, we get a little short summary and a link to the appropriate place on the World Wide Web.
Right. And as always, we put our bookmarks up on Delicious.
And that's a social bookmarking site, so you can go there and see all the past shows as well, and one nice thing without the comments and not having to go to the blog. Now that the business is out of way, we'd like to let everybody know that this will be our first week starting with our students. I start on Tuesday.
And I start on Wednesday.
And you start with a half day, right?
Yes, I start with a half day.
I start with a full day, so I get right in there and get the whole experience right away.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited, too.
I'm done with the meetings, and I'm ready to get the students.
Yes, I'm meeting doubt, and I'm ready to teach.
Yes.
It's a little nerve-wracking, but I've been doing a lot of preparation, so I think I'll feel good. I'll just be like presenting. Yeah. You know, you get a little nervous before, but once you get into it, it'll go well.
Right.
I'm pretty sure for both of us. On that note, also, I've taken up coaching, so I'm getting really busy coaching tennis, and I'm also going to run the science club, and that actually, I'm hoping, I haven't run this by anybody yet, but I'm hoping to do a little bit of technology stuff within the science club too, depending on what kind of students I get. Might even do a podcast or a video cast. So that's something down the line, probably at least a month away, but keep an eye out for that in the future.
Cool.
All right, now to the show. First up, we're going to talk in our technology section about something that I don't know how we went this long without talking about it. We've probably alluded to it several times.
Right.
Maybe we did cover it somewhere back there, and we don't remember. But it's on our list of things that we want to talk about, and that's Firefox.
Right. We want to talk about Firefox tab browsing for the internet browsing. And it's something that you introduced me to when I got my laptop at Christmas. And I enjoy it so much. I don't know how I ever lived without it, honestly. Yeah.
That's probably the killer feature in Firefox. Obviously, a lot of you probably already know this and have been told this 1,000 times by your computer friends, or you know it all, you just know it, is that it's more secure for a variety of reasons. ActiveX not being by default on, I believe, is the big one. But tab browsing, I think, is the key feature that makes everybody want to use it. It's not everybody cares about security or knows why it's more secure and stuff like that, but everybody can see that tab browsing is a better way to browse. And recently, the reason we have to talk about this is because at my school, I'm restricted to Internet Explorer. There's all sorts of other stuff I've been bugging the tech people to get to work correctly, so I haven't fought the I want Firefox on my computer battle yet, because I doubt that their filtering software works with it, and you know, there's probably a lot of technical issues, but I miss it already, just using it once in a while. And it's perfect for education, because when you're doing a lecture, it's nice to be able to bring up easily 3 or 4 or 5 different websites. And if you have them in tabs, you can just go from one to the other, and you don't have to fiddle around with Windows.
It's like having 9 home pages.
Yeah. I think it's perfect for education for presentation purposes. I mean, you can do it. You could alt tab and have the windows maximized, but I think it's just cleaner and easier. Right. And if you want to bring up, you know, series of sites, obviously it's much better than having open 20 Internet Explorer windows.
Right.
You can have just the 5 tabs and then bookmark the other 5 and then open them all at once.
Right.
So I kind of miss that, but luckily I'll be using my own laptop where I can have stuff cached and still use Firefox, you know.
Yes.
Within my classroom. So I can still get around it, but not with live content. I'll have to use Internet Explorer for the live content, because I'm pretty sure I cannot hook my laptop up to the network.
Well, another feature we were talking about was the built-in RSS reader in Firefox, right?
Yes. That is very nice. For those of you who don't know, RSS, it sort of stands for really simple syndication. It allows you to go out and automatically get a whole bunch of different blogs, the information from it without having to visit each site. Or in the case of our live bookmarks, you can constantly get updated on the show's bookmarks or somebody else's bookmarks without having to add them to your favorites every single time. So it's a powerful tool, and I encourage you to learn more about RSS, but that's not what this is about. It's just another feature of Firefox that we both like.
Right, absolutely.
We subscribe to each other's favorites so that we can easily see what the other one likes on the web at the current time. Another big thing in Firefox is extensions. And this is something that you see a little bit of add-ons to Internet Explorer, but usually they're clumsy. Firefox encourages it, and that's the key thing there. So that there's an easy way to add extensions, which increase the usability of Firefox. Sometimes it's for, you know, if you want to sort downloads, you can download stuff that will change the way Firefox downloads, or weather extensions where it'll show you the temperature and the forecast in the lower right-hand corner of your Internet Explorer or your web browser.
How do you get to the extensions, though?
I believe, let me open up Firefox here. If you click on, it's going to take a second. I believe if you click on Tools, and you go to Extensions, you'll see the ones that you have installed. And you can click Get More Extensions, then that'll take you to the website where there are the add-ons from the Mozilla.org, the ones where people posted there. But they're all over the web. Right. And the ones that I just clicked on this, and the ones that I have added are Blog This, PDF Download, and Stumble Upon, which we've never talked about Stumble Upon, but I played around that for a little bit. We'll give a review down the road. It was all right. But one of the ones that I really like is the Blog This add-on, and I have version 0.3. I probably could update that. And it allows me to right-click when I'm surfing the web. Let's say I'm somewhere on CNN.com and I like a news article and I want to put it on my personal blog, not the tech teacher's blog. I can just right-click anywhere on that page and say, blog this. And then it'll bring up a little window for me to log in to my blog. Or if I've already entered the stuff, it'll automatically do it and then allow me to post to my blog without ever logging in, changing website and all that. So there's nice little things like that just make it really easy. And that's the idea of the extensions. And there are thousands of these extensions. If there's something you want to do in Firefox that you can't do easily, I guarantee somebody wrote an extension to do it for you.
Okay.
So the usability doesn't end just at the tabs.
Right.
So explore extensions. Not all of them are as written as well as others. So sometimes you get an extension, and if it doesn't work and it breaks your browser, just uninstall it. Not a big deal.
Okay.
Have you used any extensions?
No, but you told me about them, so I kind of explored. Looked at them. I haven't really used any yet.
Some of them are useful.
Right.
And on the weather one that I use, that's one of the ones I like a lot. I don't know which one I have. I don't have it installed on my laptop here. But the weather one I like is because it doesn't come with spyware and adware. A lot of those weather programs that you install from the news channels and WeatherBug, I'm not sure if they still do, mm-hmm. are loaded with adware and spyware. Now, you agree to it somewhere. You say, yes, yeah, you can do that. You don't read the whole agreement. And they're monitoring your web traffic. Sending back what you're doing to the home office somewhere, making statistics. And then and that's okay if you are all right with that, but I really don't like that because it slows down your internet connection, slows down your computer. Sometimes they run all the time, even when the program's not launched. So just be very wary of programs that are free that do stuff with weather. A lot of them are loaded with junk you don't want. So, but there are a couple extensions out there that aren't.
Well, I think we should talk about the place where we both get our weather forecast.
Yes. I have a background in meteorology. That's what my first undergrad was in. And so I can say with some certainty that if you go to the news channel websites to get your forecast, that's probably not the best place to be doing it.
Yeah, he's usually yelling at the TV when the weather forecast people are on and saying, you're wrong.
A lot of times they're wrong. Sometimes they say things inaccurately, and that can happen with any meteorologist, really. But the key thing is a lot of times on those websites, the weather channel, or not the weather channel, but the local stations, mm-hmm. sometimes you're not getting a real updated thing. So if there's a big event going on, sometimes it's good to check everybody's forecast and what we're about to give you. But in general, where I go most of the time is the National Weather Service.
Right.
It's nws.noaa, NOAA.gov. And then in the upper left-hand corner on that page, you can type in your zip code and get a weather forecast for your area. And what they do is they break it off into zones. So you're getting a forecast really for your area. Very so even specific. If you're outside of the downtown Kansas City area, in our case, you could be out somewhere, you know, 60, 70 miles outside of the city, and they'll have done a forecast for that area and adjusted for that area.
Right.
Whereas the local guy doesn't do a whole lot of that. He's more worried about where the people are. You know. Right. But that's where I go to get my forecast, and that's where you go as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah, and the nice thing is they have a radar that pops up, and the watches and warnings, and it's a real nice, clean interface. You don't get a lot of ads.
Absolutely.
If you go to these most of these places, you get tons of other stuff you don't care about. I don't want to know what the pollen count is. I don't care if there's a sale on cars downtown. I just want the weather.
Right.
And that's all I want. Right. So that's the place to get it, really.
And then you were also talking about how you read the forecast discussions.
Yes. As a meteorologist, I don't want just the what is delivered to the public. Mm-hmm. Because what's delivered to the public is usually dumbed down, even from the government, and very general, and they have a lot of guidelines they have to follow, and they kind of have to be a little vague. If you read the forecast discussion, which on that page, after you enter your zip code, you go to the lower right-hand screen, and there will be all this text information. And one of them says forecast discussion. And if you click on that, you'll see what the person actually put out that is a more detailed discussion of the weather. And that'll give you a better idea how confident they really are. Or sometimes they'll go for like a 20% chance of rain or something. But what they're really saying is if it rains, it's definitely going to rain a lot. And you'll get something like that in the discussion. Like if we actually get the rain, it's going to rain all day. That kind of thing can sometimes, in technical terms, it won't be that straightforward, will end up in the forecast discussion. And they'll use terms you never heard of, but that's a good way to learn about the weather.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an excellent way. Now, just be aware, it depends on who's writing. If usually they put their names at the end of that discussion. Start paying attention to the names. That's the other thing, because sometimes you get somebody, you don't know if that person's been forecasting 20 years and has their PhD, or if they're fresh out of college and they came out of a school that didn't do so hot and they got lucky, got in the National Weather Service, and don't know what they're doing. So that be a little careful. But usually on big events, you don't have too much to worry about there because somebody's going to be reviewing that and stuff like that. But a little bit on the weather, completely out of our normal discussion there. But it had to do with the website.
Right,
so
absolutely.
I think it still fits. Oh, while I was at school, I remember we talked last week about DSL reports and the speed test and what ours is. And how they've actually, we got a letter after complaining. We didn't complain, but apparently other people were complaining. We got a letter on our door saying they're adding more T1 lines. So yay, we're going to have.
That's at our apartment, right?
Yeah, that's our apartment. So yay, we're going to have a faster internet connection soon again, even at peak times. I checked out DSL reports, the speed test. You know, it takes 5 seconds to do this. I checked it out just to see what it was like at school. And there's all these different levels, you know, like broadband, you know, 5 megabit broadband, really fast. And then it tops out, and I was at the top out, and it was comparing me to where it just said, normally it would say like 5 megabits per second or whatever. It just said, dude, with an exclamation point. And that was it. That's all it said was, dude, because obviously they have multiple T1 lines. Or,
and nobody was there at the
and,
time.
And there's no students there, and the teachers aren't, you know, downloading stuff.
Right.
So I was using all of it to run this little test, you know, this split second thing. And it just said, dude, you know, I was off the charts.
I'm going to try that this week.
That was fun.
School.
That was fun to see that much up and down. I don't even remember what the up and down was, but it was like 10 times as much as that I've ever seen before.
Right.
So even when I worked previously in meteorology, it was faster than their stuff. So this was amazing.
Right.
I was kind of surprised, actually. So there's a little tidbit. So if you ever get dude on your broadband, you're on pace with my school, apparently. I don't know anybody out there that's got there. If you had your own T1 line, that might happen.
Right.
Or is there a T3 line? I don't know. All right. Enough on technology. Let's take a look at our education section. And one of the things we want to talk about is
late work. Yes. This week, I was talking to some teachers about how they would deal with that. One person had an idea called mistake slips, and they said if a student wants to turn in late work, that they would give three mistake slips per semester. And what would happen is that you could turn your microphone in. Okay.
Yes.
You could turn your homework in a day late for full credit.
And you told
times
me about
per
this.
Semester. Yes, and you hate that. I'm not going to use it either.
I don't know that I said I hate it. My initial reaction was very poor because all I could think of was, well, if you gave me three late slips on something, what would I do? I'd wait. I'd be a really good student because I don't want to use them up. And then the last week of school, it'd be like three late slips.
That's what I would do.
And then
too.
Every kid in my class, since I'll have as a physics class, I'll probably have a lot of good students.
Yeah.
I'd be dealing with a massive paperwork that would be late in the last week of school. Or worse yet, some kid would use three in a row, get 3 days behind, fail the quiz, lose his confidence right before the end of the year. You know, and if that's right before the AP test or if that's right before my big cumulative final, that's horrible. So I just I didn't like the idea of it because I'm because now if I had a really difficult class where I knew kids were going to be turning in assignments late all the time, and they were going to all of them were going to turn in at least three late assignments if I was taking late work, then it might be okay because I might limit them, try to get them to focus on only using three. But I know my students, and there's not going to be that many instances, I don't think, where we're going to have more than three assignments late.
Well, we both agreed that why give them motivation to
turn something in late? Why make that acceptable?
Right, right.
I mean, everybody's going to have something late once in a while, but what I'm doing in my syllabus is I'm saying if you want to turn something in late, you need to make prior arrangements with me.
Right.
That could be 2 days before the class. That could be 5 minutes before the class. But you have to seek me out before that bell rings.
Yeah.
And before that transition time, before that bell rings. So preferably in the morning of, and explain to me why it's going to be late. And then as long as it's not a major major deadline or major project or something, I'll give an extension.
Well, this was actually one of the hardest things for me to determine.
It has to be a good read. It has to be something that makes sense.
Right.
Though.
But it was a hard thing for me to determine as I was writing my syllabus. It's because, you know, I have middle school students, and I don't know. I hate late work anyways as a teacher. I hate dealing with it. I hate grading it and messing with it. But I'm just doing, if they turn it in a day late, then they get a 20% reduction in their grade. And then after that,
and like I said, I'm not accepting it unless reduces. Prior arrangements. But I'm dealing with high school students, so they should anticipate that something's going to be late.
Right.
You know, the only way they would not is if they're trying to finish it up at lunch before they come to class. You know what I mean? But that's waiting too long to come to
talk.
But
then there's the argument,
me.
Though, that as long as they do it, they're actually doing the work. They're actually learning.
Well, I guarantee you they'll have to learn it before the test.
Right.
So that, you know, that falls into their court then. If they choose not to turn in the homework, they better know what's going on before the test.
I'm going to give mine a try and see how it goes.
All right. Well, we'll report back later on our late work and how our two systems worked with very different students.
Yes.
Another topic in education is instant feedback, and this is something that I think I got from the Harry K. Wong book.
Okay.
I probably got from the Harry K. Wong book. Try to give credit where credit's due, and we know where it came from. Say that three times fast.
okay.
Instant feedback in that as students leave, and I have a whole procedure for opening class and closing class, as students are walking out the door, now problem is I have two doors. I'm not sure how I'm going to address that. As students are walking out the door, they need to all hold a box, or I'll stand there on some days maybe and make sure that everybody gives me a piece of paper folded up with the number 1 through 5.
Okay.
And 5 being I could teach this to my little brother or little sister. That's how well I understand it. 1 being, let's say we're talking about gravity. What is gravity would be their question of the day after a whole lesson on gravity. So 1 being a disaster. You know, who knows what happened there, but something really got crosswired. And that'll give me some feedback on to how well they understand it and my pacing. You know, first time I introduce something, if I'm getting a lot of 4s or even 3s, that might be a really good success. If I'm getting a lot of 5s, maybe my pacing needs to be a little bit quicker because they think it's too easy.
Are they going to give comments then?
No. This is just a number.
Okay.
On a weekly basis. On an everyday basis, it's just a number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It'll take them 1 second, and it'll take me 10 seconds to flip through them all. So I'm just going to pitch them. I'm not going to record them every day.
I was thinking, what a waste of time, quite honestly, when you told me about this.
I'm not going to record them.
If they are writing out a paragraph every day on, think that's a big waste of time, personally.
Absolutely. I agree.
Absolutely, we need to have comprehension checks, but they shouldn't take so long, you know?
Yeah. Well, this will only take a second, and this is a way for me to see them as they leave as well, to make a check that, okay, have a good day, thank you, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
And I think 1 through 5 is enough for me to get an idea.
Yeah.
And maybe if I got a bunch of 1s on a lesson, maybe then I would do a little average. What did this lesson get?
Right.
But unless something is extraordinarily not what I expected, I'm just going to pitch them right away.
Okay.
But if something was out of the ordinary, like all of a sudden I got all 5s, I might make note of that or even do an average and say this lesson got this number. Okay, we need to make it a little bit faster, a little bit slower.
Okay.
You know? So there is the potential there to calculate if I have time. But I, as a first-year teacher, I don't think there's going to be time to do that. So
one of my colleagues was mentioning another comprehension check they would do. They teach middle school.
Oh, I have lots of other comprehension checks during the lesson.
But here's
an overall one at the end of the day.
Simple, you know, put your thumb up if you understand. Put your thumb in the middle.
I like this because it's anonymous.
Okay.
No names.
Exactly. Yes. And
you
that
can
be
was honest.
My concern. But yes.
Because I know as a student, I'd always be, oh, I get it.
Right.
No matter if I got it or not, I'm going to say I got it.
Yeah. I would too. I always got it, but. You
know, I always got it too.
Anyway.
Until 400 level math classes in college, and then sometimes I didn't get it. But
and I would.
Nobody was checking for comprehension then. It was just throwing material at you left and right.
Sink or swim.
Yeah.
Okay, so next we want to talk about...
Oh, before we move on from feedback, I am going to once in a while, maybe weekly, bi-weekly, get a little more detail, like an over, like something where they can comment, a couple quick questions type of thing. But I think my quizzes, I'm going to have fairly regular quizzes. I think they might work better as a how well am I doing than their opinion of how well I'm doing. But
Okay,
so that's feedback in the classroom. Now we're going to talk about something that I am going to set up for the students to get help outside of the classroom, and that is instant messaging. And I may have mentioned this before. Well, maybe not on the podcast. I mentioned this to a lot of people, though.
No, you've talked about it, I think, I've talked on the podcast.
Yeah.
Early on.
So for we have a lot of new listeners. So I'm going to set up a, you know, with Hotmail, I'll set up an email account, and with that, I'll get an MSN message account, and I'll use that for students that cannot, and especially now that I'm coaching, I won't be available after school. So when students need to get help and it's 8 o'clock at night and the assignment's due tomorrow, I'd rather have them send me an instant message, get that quick, take 2 minutes of my time at home to avoid the big hassle the next day with the late work and the, well, I didn't get it. So I'm going to set up an instant message thing and provide times that I will be available in the evenings on a regular basis. And I don't anticipate more than one or two students, you know, week using it. So I don't think it's going to eat up my time. Somebody, first time I said it, they looked at me and they thought, you're crazy? You're going to sit there for 2 hours? And, you know, no. I'll have the volume on the computer so that no matter where I'm at in the apartment, it'll just go ding, and I'll hear that someone sent me a message.
Okay.
And I did this when I student taught, and I think I got one instant message the whole time.
Right.
Now, they weren't used to it from the beginning, and it wasn't ingrained that this was a way to get help. So that may have contributed. But I think one or two students a week maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's worth it if those one or two students get their questions answered. Because it's not like college. I can't provide my home phone number and have students call me up like a lot of my professors did. You can't do that. And it's not like I have office hours in the middle of the night. I'm not, you know, a graduate student where you can come up to the office and there I am researching at 9 o'clock at night and you can come ask me a question. That's not available to them.
Okay.
So this is a way to do that kind of idea, which I always took advantage of in college. So.
Right.
Also, along the phone line thing, I haven't completely looked into this yet, but if I have students who don't have access to the internet or don't have before or after school or at home or at a friend's house on a daily basis, I could provide a Skype number where they could leave a voicemail for me. I could check the voicemail. There would never be direct contact one-on-one over the phone. They would leave a voicemail. I would check it. I would leave a recorded message. Then they could check it and get the answer to their question.
And that's just for your students that don't have internet access.
Yes. So that's a replacement for email and a really crude form of messaging. You know?
And how did you say you would find out if they had an internet
access? Oh, there's ways to, I'm not sure within Skype, but I know there's ways with automated phone systems that I could have, like I know I can do this with my cell phone. When I get a voicemail, I can have an email sent to me saying you have a voicemail. So I could have an individual number for each class.
Right.
And then...
But I'm talking about...
If somebody left a message for me, I would know right away via email.
You're going to survey your students, though, to see if they have internet access or not.
Yes.
Okay.
And that survey will be done very delicately. I'll say something if you have access before or after school. If not, do you have access on a daily basis, either at a friend's or at home? Mm-hmm. So it's not saying, do you have internet? It's saying, do you have access to internet somewhere along the course of the day? So there's all sorts of reasons you might not have access to it.
Okay.
And I'll run that by my mentor just to make sure that that's an appropriate question, just like I did the first time around.
Okay.
And I was told it was okay. So I'll check again just to be sure, because you don't want to ask a sensitive question without getting permission from the parents first.
Right.
Something that could be SES related. And that's my opinion.
Right. Anyway, I would agree. It's a little touchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So make somebody feel bad.
But. Any thoughts on that? What do you think about the instant messaging?
I think that's a good idea. I don't know. You do need to guard your personal time, though, as a teacher, because you spend so much time outside of class anyway preparing.
Well, I set the times. Right. It's not like they can get a hold of me anytime. I'll only be logged in at the times I specify.
Right. Because, yes, I am absolutely dedicated to my students, but I need some time to myself.
And we've got three computers sitting around here, so one of them can have that. Another one could be logged in as my regular me, and so forth and so on.
Your regular you. Yes.
My regular MSN name, yes, as opposed to the one devoted to the students. But yeah. I mean, it's just like being there after school. You know, you can be doing something else that can still be your time.
Yeah.
You just want to be available for help. And now I know I'm not going to be available for help after school because of the tennis.
Right.
So I definitely want to supplement that experience that you can come in and get help if you need it. I don't want to hear any excuse that you can't get help.
I think it's ideal. I'm just saying I would be concerned about burnout for you as a third party.
Well, if it becomes a problem, if students start taking up the full 2 hours, well, then either I'm not doing my job in the classroom, or I need to start getting the really struggling students, and I put this in my syllabus as well, or in my procedures or somewhere in there, says that I may direct you to another student as well as to me to get help. So I may take the strong student and put it with the student that is occupying my whole 2 hours every night on instant message. That will not continue for very long. Right. Either I'll try a different approach with them in the classroom or get them somebody else to help out too.
Okay.
Because something's going wrong if somebody's having 2 hours of questions a night.
Yeah.
A Ray-dominated podcast, huh?
Surely.
Are they all that way? Is that one of the complaints out there?
70-30, I'd say. Probably this time was probably 85-15.
I got a little carried away.
Yeah.
That's because I'm excited.
You got very hyped.
I'm pumped up the last couple of days for school to start.
Your rate of speech was a little faster this time.
Oh, boy. That's not good either. That's not good either. We're critiquing ourselves now. So you need to criticize us so that we don't have to do it on the podcast because nobody wants to hear this.
Don't be mean, though.
Holly's very afraid. No. Holly's very afraid. Chris, you can criticize me much more harshly than you can criticize Holly.
That's not true. You can say whatever you want. Just Ray, you can screen the emails and let me know if
I'll screen them. There we go. I'll screen the emails.
That's okay.
Oh, and we are still continuing to reply to all feedback. Because we both have the same account, one of us writes a draft and then looks over it usually and modifies and stuff. So it takes a little bit of time, especially when I'm being lazy.
Well, because we both our email agree address, to what's said.
Yeah, so. We have to agree to what's said because it's coming from both of us. Our email address again is rayandholly, H-O-L-L-Y-E, @gmail.com. Our website is thetechteachers.blogspot.com.
We wanted to thank you all for listening, and also wanted to remind you to post some comments on the blog because some of the listeners have given us some really helpful links, and that way if you comment on the blog, then other listeners can see that as well.
Yeah, so help out us and help out everybody else. This is a great communication tool, and if we start to get a lot of comments, we'll start setting up something with a forum, something a little more complicated. But right now there's been like 3 comments. And I thank you for listening as well. I tend not to do that. Until next time.